Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the April 19 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, and from Midwest Market Solutions out of Watseka, Illinois, Merrill Crowley. Wayne, let's start with you for this week. On Thursday afternoon, I thought it was apt that we were told by one of the analysts that this week's market was, well, just kind of boring.
Yes, it was, Todd. I tell you what, you know, we did see the markets. We went up and tried the highs. We couldn't really push through them, and the weather turned just enough nice, not good yet, but just enough nice that we can probably see some field work happen sometime next week, and that just took them down just a little bit. We turned the beans on outside day down on Wednesday, and things were just downright boring as far as how the corn, the wheat, and the beans did push down a little bit. And there were some advisory firms that did sell beans on Thursday.
In fact, there was actually one technical side in the beans that was pretty rough on one of these days. We had an outside down day.
Yeah, whenever you get the momentum indicators at the upper end, you start to fail and roll over and start kind of these reversal process to the downside. It kind of eliminates the buying enthusiasm. But two, seasonally and in past history, anytime we kind of rally into spring and the weather kind of breaks, we kind of lose our enthusiasm. The market has a tendency to correct until we get into the field and see what the weather outlook. Not only did the beans kind of lose momentum, the crude oil has kind of, the rising tide floats all ships. These outside markets help give some investor confidence in the grain complex. It kind of lost us a little bit enthusiasm here this week. So we're probably due to consolidate, if not pull back, just a little bit.
Kurt Kimmel, of course, is with Bates Commodities. Merrill Crowley from Midwest Market Solutions. What did you find of most interest in this market to discuss for the week?
Well, most of it, I guess, is with the beans. Following on what Kurt was talking about, the other day we had the record crush for the beans, and the beans ended up lower along with meal. And that's not usually a good sign when you have such a good report as that the product goes lower. Had we just kind of gone lower for a little bit and then gone back higher, that would have been a sell the rumor type thing. But in this case, it seems to have a little more traction. The other thing that we noticed that was a little bit unusual is that we saw China coming into Canada buying 20 cargoes of beans, 10 old crop, 10 new crop. The interesting thing is they bought more beans out of Canada yesterday than they bought out of Brazil. The basis there was about 15 to 20 cents higher than the U.S. U.S. price is. And normally, because of the low oil content that the Canadian beans have, the basis is reversed with the U.S. at 15 to 20 higher.
So when we think about this beginning of the season, it seems late at this time, Kurt. I'm wondering whether the trade has really thought about it being late. It really is only the 19th day of April as we're recording.
Yeah, when you look at the way producers are equipped and how much corn we can plant in 1 week, it's phenomenal. So if this weather would cooperate, especially in the southern half of the growing region here, I think we could get a lot of grain in the ground. When you talk to producers, you know, they're not going to make any decisions until we get into well mid part of May. The key, though, is the soil temperatures. We just need to see some warmer weather in through here. That would change things in a hurry, but gosh, you talk to those guys in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and the Dakotas. Not only do you wait for the snow to melt, then you got to wait for it to dry up.
You know, as we talk about the weather and that, we talked, I think, on Tuesday about the planting progress. In 16, we saw 42% planted in 1 week, 24% in 1 week in 17. What we are at, we know that the South has been planting. Our guys in Kentucky are done planting corn. Our guys in Arkansas are done planting corn. So it is moving up and along. But we are a little bit behind. We're used to getting this early in here. And the one thing that we've talked about here, and you look and you hear as the analog years when we had, and this was the coldest April on record. Then we look when we have a cold April and the start of May being cold, is we generally don't make trend line yields because of the temperature and the bad planting things. That's one of the things that we're maybe looking at with the reduced acres from what we've had the last couple of years, and maybe going down 2 to 4 bushel on our at or below trend yield, that can make a lot of difference in what our carryout could be and what's going on. We did see tremendously good sales again on Thursday for corn and beans. The wheat was terrible. It was a minus for the week. We had some cancellations. But all in all, I think it's looking at that, and that maybe because of the tendencies for years of colder early and the not making trend line yields is what we're thinking about.
So this is something I've talked with Mike Tenora about extensively, in fact, that he was on campus this week, guest lecturing in one of Scott Irwin's commodity marketing classes, a 400-level class. I got the ability to stand there and watch and videotape some of that, so you can find it on our website at willag.org when I get the video produced, that is. It won't be very long from now. But had gone back and taken a look at the number of years over the history in the Corn Belt of how these cold Aprils really impact the yield. There are 7 such years since the 1960s or the modern era, once we had anhydrous and fertilizers and chemicals. And of those 7, he says 6 of them were below the detrended line, meaning if you take the trends from those years and put them in today's numbers, that you were right. And 2 to 4, they were this year. I think the detrended number for 2018 for corn is something like, 171, just above that, bushels to the acre. The detrended, all 6 of those were 166 to 170. So they were off as much as 5 bushels to the acre. How much of a difference would a single or 2 bushels to the acre make on the limited number of corn acres I think we have at this point and their expectations from USDA?
Yeah, that's huge, because when you go back to the March report, we brought down the old crop stocks due to better exports. So you got a smaller inventory coming into the new crop corn. 2 million less planted acres. We don't know what harvested acres are. We could have less of a number on the actual harvested acres. So when you do the math on it, at 170 bushel, 169 bushel, you can take carry out down to 1.6 real quick. Now you start taking more off that, that shrinks that bottom line even more. A lot of people are referring this year to 83. 83, though, was a pick year, and we lost 10 million corn acres, I believe. This year, we've lost about 2 million. The pick year, everybody spent all summer mowing oats, but that was huge, too. So this corn market is going to be quite exciting here as we get in the growing season. But the thing is, this weather pattern is following the Farmer's Almanac almost to a T in through here. It's been an El Nino or a La Nina type of winter pattern. It talked about snow showers through the month of April. It talks about May being a little bit warmer and wet, but once June and July comes, it's going to be much warmer.
That 1983 pick year was one of the 7 years. However, when he takes a look at it, Mr. Tornora says probably an outlier because it was down, even detrended, at about 140 bushels to the acre. So it was way outside of the norm. What do you think about all of this discussion as it relates to the cold weather and yield across the United States? It's awfully early in the year.
It is awfully early in the year, and it just depends on what the year does after you get it planted. I've got no argument with Mike. He knows his stuff. It was kind of interesting. The guy I follow was talking about looking at colder than average Aprils going in 2000, including 2000 to now. And I was really surprised. There are only 4 years that April was warmer than normal since 2000. He thinks this may be, with the sunspots like Zwicker talks about, this may be putting us into a later than normal start to our planting and an earlier start to our winters. Didn't necessarily say early frost, but it said an early start. And the other thing I have to is when we're looking at trend, with the stocks report that I saw with corn, we were, 180 million bushels out of nowhere? and they were trying to place it in the feed, but the best fit really goes with them underestimating our huge crop that we had last year. Adding that back in, you're going to push your last year's yield to 179. Well, that then just filters through to your ending, you know, trend yield. It should be up higher maybe than what it should be, what it is right now.
So wait, so you're thinking you want to ask to add bushels back in at the end of this marketing year so that our carryout's larger than expected?
I don't mean to ask. I'm just saying you can't find a place where those bushels came from necessarily that makes any real sense unless you go back to the actual yield estimate by the USDA in January. They're not going to change that number, but if you take that 180 back and run it back through, you move the yield for that year up to around 179 bushel per acre.
What should producers take away from that at this point?
Well, if you just, you were asking about how much you increase, if you're doing 175 million acres, or if you're doing 100, let's just round to 180, you're looking at roughly 360 million being added to the ending stocks just from a better yield.
That's a lot of corn.
Yeah. It just depends on how much we use and what happens if we have weather, say like 83. I know they were talking about how the idled acres were there, but if you go look at the yields that we got in 83, and especially when you figure all those idled acres were the worst ground that the farmers had, they ain't going to idle their best, you have a pretty good reduction in the per bushel per yield from 82 to 83. So there was a definite loss due to weather. And if you had something similar to that this year, then the 360 is really not going to matter.
Right. So put it all back together for me. So you're thinking 360 million bushels added back into the ending stocks for the current marketing year. However, you're thinking that when we look forward, because
I shouldn't have said 360, because that should have been two bushel on about 90 million acres. It really should have been 180.
So 100, you were doubling the numbers. So you were at 180 to begin with.
And
So you add 180 in to this year's carryout. But again, when you then fast forward into the end of next marketing year, the crop that's being put in the ground now, you're thinking, even if we have a higher yield, we're still, what do we do to the, what are, I'm trying to figure out what you're telling me.
What we do with the weather and how it affects the crop when the dry weather comes. We have something called a Madoki El Nino looks like might be developing. If you've never heard of that, that simply means that instead of the El Nino being warm water all the way across, you get it in the middle and cold water on both ends. That tends, not greatly, that tends to suggest warmer, drier weather for the growing part of the U.S. And like I said, suggest. So that way, if you're looking on down the line and you're saying, well, I'm going to put 180 in this. Oh, well, I should be selling. No, not necessarily, because you have that suggestion and we're going to have to watch the weather. My weather guy also says that he's looking for hotter than normal. When we finally get out of the cold, we're going to go right to summer.
Right. So I was trying to put it all together, but I think I got it now. So let me make sure I've got this right. So you're fearful about old crop. And its ability to move and maybe say sideways or consolidation through the summer months. But that would be looking into the new crop based on some weather and, again, lower ending stocks by the time we get to the fall of 2019.
And this follows along with I'm looking for a cycle low coming at the end of May, 1st of June. I'm sorry, end of May, 1st of June. If that cycle low hits, and that would be seasonal, that we'd move down into it. And I don't mean we have to drop clear down to, say, 350 or again or anything like that. All I'm saying is we could move back down to, say, 365, 370. And in the old crop, in the new crop, we might go down as low as 390. That would be awfully low, I think. Or we could move sideways into that low, and then that point we would see the weather starting to take effect and rally us back up if we're going to have a rally.
So I've got some interesting conversation here to talk to you guys about, because this brought in something that we hadn't really thought about. You mentioned that Dan Zwicker watches the sunspots. There is a lack of sunspots. Actually, this is one of the slides that Mike Tenora showed the class yesterday. It was a photo, a picture of the sun taken recently, and the lack of sunspots. And if essentially what he says is that means if there is a lack of sunspots, there's less volatility and less heat coming off of the sun, so that we could have a cooler rather than a warmer. But we've got both sides of this party we're playing out, weather forecast for the summer, and that too might have an interesting impact on yield.
It sure would. That Ladoki thing that he talked about, I've never heard of it, but we're going to find more about it because that might be our new word for the summer.
Instead of La Nina, Ladoki.
Ladoki, El Nino is going to be, might be our word for the summer. But basically along the way, NOAA come out with their findings. Basically the Midwest is slightly above or slightly below normal temperatures and stuff for what they're looking at with what NOAA's looking at. But we have been talking to Dan a lot, and he's every time he talks about the sunspots, and he has seemed to do it. I don't know. He didn't seem to have spurs on this afternoon when I was listening to him, but if we get him looking back at those sunspots, he might have to put those spurs back on.
Well, we'll see whether Dan will put the spurs back on at some point. We'll have to wait that one out. But the market really is calm kind of at the moment, Kurt. Part of that's because it seems to be in waiting mode now for the planters to roll, and Washington, D.C. was a little quieter this week, too.
Yeah, you can really pick up on market action and notice that, but option volatility's dropped tremendously. We were up around 20-22%. Now we're down about 12%. So if you're an option player, you need to keep that in mind. There could be some buying opportunities with the low volatility. But to add what you mentioned there, I think the trade's waiting for the May supply-demand balance sheet because we'll have a new crop estimate there. But the market is just kind of waiting for the next shoe to drop. Whether it's bullish or bearish, we're fixing to find out.
Yeah, I think that that's very much so. As we are seeing, and we tried to set back here on Thursday, we'll see how the market closes for the week. And basically, a lot of things are going to contend on, as you were talking about Washington, what comes out of there. You know, there's really trying to get a settlement in this NAFTA thing right now, and that would help solidify a lot of things. The beans, as we talk about those, it's going to be crazy that we would lose going to China with all of our beans, or a great number of our beans. But if Brazil goes to China and Argentina goes to China and doesn't increase their acreage tremendously, it's still going to open up a lot of markets to the U.S. to go to. And if China's paying up for the Brazilian beans, we could actually see a 10 or 20 cent bounce following along what China's having to pay extra for the others, because the others are going to have to come to the other grocery store than only ones that has a supply left. So, you know, if we're looking at that. You know, and while you were talking, we're going into this, we just pulled out the NOAA map, and it's white, which means just a little bit above or below normal. That way is what NOAA's looking at. But I don't think they know about those Siddiqui things.
USDA, Kurt, has adjusted their May numbers for the new crop away from trend based on what's happening in the planting season in recent years. I'm assuming that they'll take some of that into account at this point. It'll be interesting to see what those numbers look like. But what are your expectations today?
Well, they'll probably be kind of conservative. I think there is pressure to kind of get it right and until we get the crop in the ground. Probably the April report, we'll see a little bit more of an adjust. Not the April, but the June report will be a little bit more online as far as what we're planning progress. But we're expecting, when you follow the numbers through, the new crop ending stocks are probably going to be closer in this 1.6, 1.7 billion bushel area. And the new crop bean ending stocks is huge by the trade. It's anywhere from 400 million bushels clear up to 800 million bushels on it.
The wild card is way, way, way behind on spring wheat plantings, way, way, way cold and nasty and wet with snow up in that area. Will those acres go to beans or prevent plant?
Merrill, do you have a supply and demand figure set for the May report?
Myself, no. But I have stolen them from RJO, and there are two people that do their work for them, and their ending stocks for next year, they're basically looking between 1.79 to 1.343. Now, 1.343 would really be tight, and the 1.790 is not exactly what you call a lot of supply. It's only, what, a month, month and a half?
Yeah, so we were talking about 2 billion, somewhere below 2 billion, but if you get down to 1.79 or 1.8, that starts to get much, much tighter.
Anything, I think, below 1.8 is basically starting to get really nice and tight. And again, your weather would have more effect on it if the USDA comes out with that number.
Okay, so from each of you, let's just talk about corn for the moment. Looking forward into the new crop, do producers have enough new crop marketed at this point? If not, what should they do about it?
Well, the only thing that I know is you can sit here in April and talk all you want to talk about how many acres are going to be planted and what the weather's going to be like. And the thing gets to be is at the end of the year, the farmer's got to pay his bill. So anytime we could get up somewhere around, I would say, 420, you probably ought to look very seriously at getting some sort of puts strategy on your corn so that you've got protection in case the geniuses here are wrong.
Never wrong. Timing's off 1 to 2 to 3 years sometime.
Or is it right? The market's right.
Or the cash grain guy said, you're just a wee bit early. Now, we've recommended a few increments of some forward sales. You know, it just depends on your own personal situation. And we've got some resting orders above the market in case the market takes off to kind of lay into it. But the most simple strategy in the whole wide world to give you some comfort to sleep at night and protect your downside as a producer is to put in a $4 price floor. That way, if the market goes higher, you can take advantage of it. If your bushels change because you don't know exactly what your cost of production is, you've got the flexibility to take advantage of some up moves. So we've been going down that route and through here and until we get into middle of summer and see where we are.
Yeah, we're probably 20% priced in the cash market as we go along, just so we don't have to put a hedge money on everything. I love Kurt's idea of having a floor underneath this market. And we're looking at, depending on where the next step that you would maybe sell at is, if it's going to be 450, you know, we can sell a 450 call and say we're going to put a hedge on there. We're not doubling up. We got the one on the bottom and one on the top. These accumulator contracts we're talking about, that would be doubling up. We're not doubling up. We're just willing to make our next cash sale there, or our hedge is put there. So, you know, we have, 20% sold in the cash market. We've probably got another 10% in puts. And then we are looking of paying for some of those puts with, say, a $450, a $475 calls along the way, or at least partially paying for them.
I think it's probably on the soybean side safe to say that most farmers will have beans priced in a large part of the Midwest, I think, between 970 and 1010 cash, probably. If you get farther west, their basis is much wider, so it's not going to be that high for sure. And what, at the 35% level, is that enough at this point for the soybeans?
Well, we saw a couple of advisory firms go to 50% price today. They sold at the market when they broke through the technical points today. You know, they've been in and out of, they've been at 50%, they've been back to 0%, and they've worked back to 50 on this rebound. So I'm thinking 30% is enough for right now and maybe a put or two. Some advisory firms are at 50 to 60.
Yeah, 30 to 50%, you know, it pencils out as long as you have the bushels in through here. But the remainder of it, we're doing the price floor at $10 on the beans. You know, we defend that $10 level. Hope the thing rallies to 11, then on up to Zwicker's benchmark at 12, hopefully.
Yeah, with Glenn Ring's number that he gave out for the beans and the corn, they're all really in line. And actually, when you think about them in terms of how we retrace back up toward the highs we had in 2012, you're only looking at retracements of about 38%. And that's kind of scary because, you know, at some point in time, corn likes to go to 50, and at some point in time, beans likes to go to the 618. And that's a lot higher than what Glenn was talking about with the 520 and the $12.
Of course, we talked to Glenn on the Wednesday closing market report. I'm going to make you do some hoops if you want to go find that, because it's not actually up on the website anymore. The Commodity Week program stay up there in the archive, but the closing market report does not. However, if you go to iTunes or one of the podcast apps, you're more likely to find it. So you can use NPR, the NPR One app. I put it in SoundCloud. That might be one of the easier places to find it. And you can find closing market reports going back for at least the week, maybe a bit farther in many of those particular applications. So go find that. The conversation with Glenn Ring was a really good one. That took place on Wednesday. Okay, final words from each of you this week for what we started out as a boring week in the marketplace.
Well, it has been a boring week, and it's been sort of a depressing week in the respect that we've faded off our highs. We did not push through the 1060 or up to the 422-25 area that we were hoping we would. But the fact of the matter is, I think that we're going to fade a little bit until we see how the weather, if we can make some good planning progress through the Midwest, we're going to fade a little bit here, and then we're going to see what happens. And then we're going to trade sideways into that May report. And I think that's the one. And when we see how the planning progress is really going and how China reacts and how our government reacts about the tariffs, hopefully we can get NAFTA signed by next week. We can all be happy and smiling.
This week, we did see the commercials target Mexico here on some sorghum, and they were offering some Mexican processors, end users, 25% below Gulf values. Also, too, a certain commercial firm went to their buyers in Mexico who had corn purchases on the books and offered them cheaper sorghum. So there's some fundamental things that can change here to hold things in check. So even though we might sound optimistic, you guys still have some downside protection.
I went back and was looking again at the April highs versus the February, April, March, and it's a low percentage. Ricker was mentioning it last week on his comments, and it's true. I was mentioning back when we had March 8th, I believe, with Ellen Dearden. And the point I want to make here is you do get a pretty good rebound almost every year. You get a weather rebound. And if assuming this is high or very close to the high, weather markets that I was looking at are 1 to 2 weeks long. That's not very long to get stuff priced. So my main point I'm trying to make here, get your marketing plan in place. Figure out where you got to be and what you need to price.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. You can always look us up on demand there and listen to us whenever you'd like. And to get a longer look back, you can use one of the podcast apps. iTunes is a good place to go. Stitcher is a great place to go. Everything is posted into an application called SoundCloud that comes up almost immediately. And of course, you can look in the NPR and the NPR One app. Our thanks go this week to our panelists, including from Midwest Market Solutions out of Watseka, Illinois, Merrill Crowley, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.